So, interview 9th of April 2009, and also present is Ellen Murphy, Andrew O'Brien and Ulrika Neeson of Dublin City Archives. What age were you at the time of the North Strand bombing?
I'd say 11 or maybe 12, I'm not quite sure. It was 41, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Well, then I would have been 12, I think, yeah. That doesn't tie in with other things. I remember I was in fifth year in the primary, and I was in secondary school by the time I was 13. Those two dates don't tie up. Well, I was born in 1928, anyway. I would have been 12. I wouldn't have been 13 until the November, but I did a year afterwards in the primary school before I went on to secondary, and I was still in secondary by the time I was 13, so I can't figure that one out, but there you were.
Yes. Yeah. And which area of the North Strand were you living in?
Charlton Plaid. That's just over Newcomen Bridge, on the other side of where the bomb fell, and it was a bit of a dip, and so we escaped the worst of the bombing. I think there were 35 or 37 people killed in the bombing. I knew at least one of them, but that was about it. We lost the worst of the blast anyway. It went over our heads.
Yeah. So on the night of the bombing, who was in your house?
My mother was there. I'm not sure if my father was or not. He often was on night work. Now, whether he was on night work that night or not, I'm not sure. Can't remember.
Who did he work for then?
CIE.
Oh, right. Yeah,
yeah. Or GSR, I think, as it was that time, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so what do you remember about the actual night then?
I remember I had tonsillitis. I had been sick for a while with this tonsillitis thing, and I was in bed, and the next minute I heard a whistle that wakened me up, and I realised straight away it was an air raid. I don't know how I realised. Well, I'd seen so much of it, I suppose, on films and things like that. I recognised the whistle of the bomb, and I knew it was an air raid. And then the explosion came, and a lot of the plaster on the ceiling came down. We had an extension at the back of the house. It was a wooden extension that was blown in two. All the street had more or less the same type of problems with the house.
Did you come down the stairs and onto the street then?
Well, there was a bungalow. There was no stairs. I jumped on the meter and said, and my mother came in. As far as I can remember, she came in then anyway. And whether I went down, I can't remember. That was basically it. The odd thing I remember, I didn't feel nervous at all. But when it was all over, I felt my knees and they knocking together, even though I didn't feel the least bit frightened or anything, you know?
Yeah.
What was the after effects of the whole thing or not, I don't know.
Yeah. And do you remember the ARP or any of the...
Yeah, a lot of ARP people around. My uncle, who lived quite close by, he was in the ARP, and his wife and himself, they came over to our house, I suppose, to see how we were. And then he was going off of the ARP, and his wife, I think they were recently married at that time, and his wife was a little nervous seeing him go off. A couple of amusing incidents happened. I heard after it, whether this story is a make-up one or not. I only got it at second hand. I had another uncle, by the way, who was a policeman, and he lived exactly opposite the school which I went to. Well, I better give you the full story first of all, but this policeman was coming down apparently, and this little young fellow was rolling up, and he was running up in the middle of the night to see if the school had been blown up. He was hoping the school would be blown. But that could be a story. And it could have been my uncle, because my uncle would have been the policeman directly opposite, you know?
Yeah.
But there you are.
That's a story.
Yeah.
And were you able to spend a night in the house afterwards? We
didn't have to leave. But the workmen were around, the repair gang, if you like to call them, they were around for quite a few months afterwards, you know?
Yeah.
They seemed to enjoy themselves immensely. It was the best day's work they ever had, I think, you know?
From the corporation workmen?
I suppose so, yeah.
And did you ever remember hearing that you got compensation or anything for any damage that was done?
No. It wouldn't have been us anyway. We only rented the house.
Yeah.
And so whether the landlords got any compensation or not, I don't know,
What was it like in school and things afterwards? Were people full of talk?
Oh, yeah, I remember we went to the school the next day, and Christian Blutter came around and put his head in and checked all the pupils, see that everybody was here, and he just said good when he was having, he saw us all here, and he went off to check some other class then as well, you know?
Yeah.
That was it, yeah.
And had there been anyone in your school that was badly affected by the bomb then?
Not that I'm aware of, no. The butcher that we used to go to, he was killed in it, and I have a funny feeling another member at least of his family was killed also. The story went around, again, whether it was true or not, I don't know, that he was beheaded or something in the blast. But whether that's true or not, I can't be sure. There was one girl, I think her name was Madge, Edith Madge was lying in a room there were two girls apparently together, and one had got out of the bed to go over to have a look at what was happening, and the blast apparently blew her right through the from the window over to where the bed was. One of them was killed. I have a funny feeling it was the girl in the bed who was killed, but the girl who was blown across the room, as far as I can remember, escaped or something. Wow. It saved her life on exercise, being curious, yeah, apparently, but there you were.
What was kind of the talk in the schoolyard? Did you feel who was responsible?
I don't think so. Plenty of talk, I'm sure, all right, and kids complaining, notes, but well, this wasn't of any great importance. I wouldn't remember it exactly, you know.
Yeah. What was it like in Dublin during the emergency in general? Do you remember food rations or having to come up with an imaginative?
There was a half an ounce of tea. There was a joke about that. There was a song about it. Bus was blessed De Valera and Sean McEntee for giving us brown bread and a half ounce of tea. So there was that sort of a song going on at the time. You know, it was a skit, but that lasted thing, yeah.
Do you want to come in with any questions?
Yeah, please. There's a couple of things there that kind of prompted me to think of maybe we could talk a little bit more about. Ellen's already talked about school and
so
on.
Yeah, I know.
But you had breaks and you had lunchtime and you had summer holidays as well. And
that's right, yeah.
At your time then, would you have preferred to play cowboys and Indians or Germans and goodies and baddies?
Well, we played football on the street a lot. It was a lovely life in a way. I often wish to God we were back there. Back to that time, because we came home from school and with a tennis ball we could play football on the streets, and maybe twice a year a detective would come around to chase us off the streets. It was all a big joke as far as we were concerned. As far as he was concerned, I'm sure it was a big joke as well. But there were no cars on the road. You would see an odd car with a huge big canopy over them and full of gas, and they were driven around on gas. It was obviously official cars who had this, but all the other cars were off the road. A doctor maybe had a car. No, I'm not sure about that. That was it. But it was grand to see the place free of cars. No, there weren't many cars even at the best of time in those days. But now, quite honestly, I hate the sight of a car.
And during the summer holidays then,
Looking
back on it now, no different than any other summer holiday before or after?
Not that I can remember.
Same.
My people that came from the country, we used to go back down to an aunt of mine every year. I used to sometimes stay behind down in Wexford, and I loved it down there. Mm. There was no difference there at all, as far as I was concerned, anyway.
And you mentioned that you knew one of the victims.
Yeah.
Who was that, can I ask?
As far as I can remember, his name was Fitzpatrick. I had his name there a couple of days ago, and then I suddenly go up today and I wonder, my God, was it Fitzpatrick? I think it was.
Yeah, you don't know his first name.
No, I didn't know his first name, but I think it was a girl named Madge who would have been a daughter.
And this Fitzpatrick chap was a
butcher shop. No, it was on the North Strand itself, where St. Agatha's Church is at the moment. There was a whole lot of houses right in front of it. They were all blown down. So you could, for the first time, you could see the church from the main road. He was one of those houses. At the corner of William Street, I think it was.
Yeah, and he was the butcher, was he?
He was the butcher, yeah.
Yeah, it's incredible to think that the bomb that had fallen at the Newcomen Bridge could decimate lives, and yet you were under the bridge.
Well, let's put it this way. There was a curve like this. If you go over the Newcomen Bridge, there's a curve on it.
Yeah.
The bomb fell here, which was near where the church was.
We were
over here, and we missed the blast. You see, the blast went over our heads.
The bomb fell on the south side, just on the south side, was it?
What would you call it, north or south side? It'd be west side, I'd call
the
it.
West side.
Or anything
yeah.
else, I'd say, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and you were just on the other side.
I was on the other side, yeah.
And you were lucky.
I suppose we were on the, come to think about it, we were on the north side, maybe it was the south side of the bridge, I suppose, come to think about it, yeah.
Yeah. It must have been strange when daylight broke and you saw this scene.
Oh, we couldn't believe it. I remember going up, there was barricades up, of course. We couldn't get much past the bridge itself, and all the crowds were gathering there, and again, I have a vague recollection of ambulances coming along and bringing off a body, maybe, or something. Now, maybe it might be only one of those I saw, but I think that sort of thing was going on all the time, probably. Mm-hmm. There was a soldier on the bridge, and he was talking about we just had them in our sights or something. But the aircraft guns were going pop, 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 pop all the time. Where they got all the ammunition from, I don't know.
Whereabouts were the anti-aircraft guns?
I don't know. Yeah. Probably in the Phoenix Park or something, I couldn't say.
At what time did the bomb actually fall?
I have a feeling again it was probably 1 a.m, though I'm not sure. Right. Otherwise, yeah. I'd been asleep for a long time before that.
And then the funerals?
I don't remember the funeral as much, mind you. I don't remember that at all.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay, I think that's pretty much covered it, but I just wanted to talk about, as Ellen was talking there about the emergency generally, like, and rationing and things like that. My uncle used to talk about, there used to be a type of toffee around at that time called Halftime Jimmy. I don't know if that was around when you were...
I remember, as I said, it was only half an ounce of tea. My father didn't like coffee, and he didn't like coffee, so they left a half ounce of tea for him. And I liked the coffee, my mother liked the coffee, and I enjoy a cup of coffee ever since, but there you go. That was the first time, though, I ever tasted coffee, in fact, yeah.
Any explanation given by any of the adults or teachers as to what this bomb's about, why it happened, or anything like that?
No, I can't remember anything on that. I remember sometime after that, an Irish fellow, he was in the Air Force, and he grabbed a biplane, he was a Gladiator or something, and he went off to Germany, he wanted to join the Luftwaffe. And he was for sale in England. I remember this quite well. And that was a great joke in the classroom. And the teacher said he was mad, you know. Strange to say, about 2 or 3 years ago, he was on the radio. And this time he was living in England. And he lost his job, of course, in the Irish Air Force. I think he was a trainee officer or something, or maybe he was a sergeant, I'm not sure. But he was forced down in England, and he ended up fighting in the RAF against the Germans in the Battle of Malta. Yeah.
And you went down to Wexford, and they had some bombing incidents down there as well.
Yes, but I wasn't there at that time, you know.
Yeah.
There was stories about that, I remember, a funny one, but apparently... an English or a German plane, but they dropped a petrol can out of the thing. Apparently there were men in the field. Now this is a story again, and say whether they're true or not, I don't know. But some of the workmen in the field took up their spades and presumed they were pretending they were going to fire on the airplane. And the story is that the airman dropped a petrol can out on top of the fuel, but they fainted apparently. But that again could be a story, you know, I don't know.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Unless you have any other final comments you want to add yourself?
Offhand, I can't think of any. There used to be a little bit of rows around the street, but arguments amongst the kids. Some of the kids were pro-German, and some were pro-British, if you like. I say the majority were pro-German at that time. It was a very nationalist time. It was only 20 years after the War of Independence, you know. And there was that class of thing. One fellow, I remember, he was disgusted that it was the Germans who did it, and he said that all the people would be anti-German now, and he was disgusted over that, you know.
So there was a real, you're saying that there was a real strong pro-German?
I'd say, I would say it was pro-German. Well, the kids would do anything for the sake of an argument, you know. But there was nothing terribly strong, except this one fellow who was a bit of, I think he was a bit of a head case. He came from a very unhappy home. His mother and father were dead. And there was an elder brother who wasn't the best, to say the least. I saw him giving the young fellow a terrible beating one time, you know. But this young fellow, he had problems purely and simply. And I think he needed something to hate half the time, the poor kid, but that was it. He was very pro-German. He was a fellow who said the people will be anti-German now, and he was discussing over the fact that the people might be anti-German. But
And as you grew up then, you know, as a teenager, young man, got work or whatever, had your own family or whatever.
Yeah.
To what extent did the North Strand bombing, which was a key event in your childhood, colour your way of looking at the world generally?
I don't think any effect at all. I don't think so. We were surprised at it. People didn't believe the propaganda they got in those days. And some of the British propaganda was a bit over the top, and they were very emotional altogether at that time, and they were discussed because we didn't go into the war with them. And that got up. Again, as I say, this is in one area. The north side of the city, by the way, as far as I can see, was always more nationalist-minded than the south side. I have that impression still. But anyway, No.
But the colour or the stain of the North Strand bombing didn't reach
down deep into your psyche. Oh, there was a thing afterwards I read that annoyed me a little, but there was something in the, I think it was the Old Evening Mail, a notice in the Old Evening Mail apparently, that some British officer was talking to some of his men in the airport or something. They had, must be the time that the radar system came in, and they were able to deviate some of the planes or something with this. And we had a great laugh the next day when we heard that Dublin had been bombed. I remember that struck me as a bit odd, you know. But
okay. Thank you very much.
Not at all. You're welcome.
Okay, thank you very much.